Welcome to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Andy Jones, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thanks very much for tuning in to your local campus and community radio station on a Wednesday afternoon. For almost the last 10 years of Wednesday afternoons, I've been coming down here to the studios of KDVS in 14 Lower Freeborn on the UC Davis campus to share with you interviews with poets, pundits, prognosticators, creative types of all sorts. We've also talked to actors and directors on this show, and also people from the world of technology, of business, of innovation, and entrepreneurship. Every week I find folks who I think are worth your time, and today will be no exception. Liberty Kovacs is here in the studio. She is the only person ever to be the wife and the mother of a Pulitzer Prize winner in poetry. We're going to be talking about James Wright and Franz Wright this afternoon, as well as the book that Liberty Kovacs wrote 2 years ago that chronicles her long and interesting life, touching on poetic topics, but also topics in nursing, therapy, San Francisco, and a great number of other things that you care about. In the second half of the hour, I'll also be touching on the Davis Schools Foundation, and we'll talk about the ongoing Dollar a Day campaign being waged now to protect the schools of the city of Davis and to provide all of its children more educational opportunities. That and multiple interruptions for poems, for jazz, for public service announcements, and maybe for your calls here at KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis, home of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We'll be right back.
All right now. Sit back now, relax. Let your mind unwind. Let the cobwebs and fog slip on out of your ears and slide on down your shoulders.
But before we go any further, I want to know how's everybody feeling?
Welcome back, everyone, to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Dr. Andy, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thanks very much for tuning in to your local campus and community radio stations. Liberty Kovacs is here in the studio, known as Libby to her friends. She's a novelist and clinical therapist who has practiced marriage counseling for 35 years. Her autobiography, published in 2008, is titled Liberty's Quest, the compelling story of the wife and mother of two Pulitzer Prize-winning poets. In that book, she tells about her breaking free from the patriarchal rule of her Greek immigrant family and setting an uneasy but independent course that led her to become a nurse and to marry the poet James Wright. The novel has been described as, quote, a courageous and triumphant story of making the most of unhappiness and despair, an amazing epic of one person's search for personal freedom. Libby Kovacs is here in the studios with me here at 14 Lower Freeborn. Libby Kovacs, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
We're happy to have you here. And you have a compelling story to tell. Husband and son were the only two people to be father and son or mother and daughter and both win the Pulitzer Prize for poetry.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
and so I'm wondering the extent to which you touch on poetic topics in your book and what inspired your book, Liberty's Quest.
I was retiring, mm-hmm. and I needed something to transition myself from working over 50 years and coming into retirement. I had no idea what I was going to do with that time.
Right.
So it occurred to me, I was in therapy at the time, and I said, I don't know what I'm going to do. And she said, well, why don't you write a book? I'm not a writer. Yes, you are. You've been writing articles for 30 years.
Right.
So I took a class at Sac State in writing, and I got a B+ in it. So.
Good for you.
So I joined a writer's group and started writing, and for the next 5 years, this book sort of evolved.
Excellent. Good for you. Tell me a little bit more about the writing community that you created in Sacramento. What part of Sacramento do you live in, and how is it that you found
your writing friends? Yes, I live in East Sacramento, mm-hmm. which is near the UC Davis Medical Center.
Right.
And I live that close to the medical center because when I started working as a mental health nurse consultant back in the 70s, mm-hmm. I commuted for 4 years from Walnut Creek.
I see.
And after 4 years, I was very tired, so sure. I decided we should buy a house near the university mm-hmm. medical center, and we actually did, and it's only a block and a half from the...
Oh, that's wonderful.
So I didn't have to drive 150 miles anymore.
When I was a graduate student living in Sacramento, I would rollerblade from Midtown to the Med Center to take the shuttle to UC Davis.
Yeah.
So I probably have rollerbladed past your house on many occasions.
I'm sure you have. Yeah. It's surrounded by bushes and plants and trees and like everything else.
Yeah, there's some beautiful neighborhoods near the medical center in Sacramento. And how was it that you found originally your writing group? And tell me more about the support.
Oh, I didn't find it. I found that there was a writing group, and I joined it. Mm-hmm. The instructor was Amy Kaplan, and she was working on a book, and I don't think she's ever published, but she was certainly a great teacher. And just over the next 5 years, somehow or another, this book started to evolve.
Right.
And finally it started to take... She said, well, you're going to have to put it in some kind of order. And so I worked on that for a couple of years. And then when I thought I had finished it, because I came to my... I was in my 70s when I started, mm-hmm. so... I was fast approaching 80, and I thought, I guess I need a publisher. That's the next step.
Right.
Oh, well, that's the hardest. I love writing, but finding a publisher, selling the book, the books, because I wrote another one too. Anyway, I think I like writing better.
Yeah. You prefer writing over all of the business of publishing and marketing.
The marketing and all that. I'm learning a lot. And I'm moving slowly.
That's great. Well, let's take a moment to talk about that. First, I'll remind folks at home, if you're just joining us, Liberty Kovacs is my guest. She's the author of the memoir, an autobiography called Liberty's Quest, the compelling story of the wife and mother of two Pulitzer Prize-winning poets. She's the wife of James Wright, who passed away in 1980, and whose poetry we've heard in recorded form on this radio show on many an occasion, and the mother of Franz Wright, the poet who also won the Pulitzer Prize in poetry. And so speaking of the business of writing, we saw each other at a writer's conference in Sacramento a couple of weeks ago, a writers and publishers conference. I'm wondering if you could tell folks at home a little bit about what you learned from that conference, if you found it helpful.
Basically, I'm learning that I have to learn how to do the websites and the internet and blogs.
Right.
So I'm trying to learn as fast as I can.
Yeah.
And I'm getting a lot of help from other people who know a little bit more than I do. So I do have websites, and I'm not sure whether they're working or not. Uh-huh. So I still need help in maintaining them.
Well, when it comes to promoting our books, I think all of us need help. And so,
oh, yes, that's a huge job.
Absolutely.
It's a big job.
And with the state of the publishing industry, the book industry, it's a job that's largely been offloaded to authors themselves.
It is, yes. After the first year, my publisher called me and he said, do you want to pay $89 a month to have your book stored at this huge warehouse, or do you want to keep them? And I said, well, I guess I better keep them. And he said, well, I've got 2,000 for you.
Oh, yeah.
So my garage is filled with books.
I bet.
I'm thinking of having a garage sale.
Right. And so so I know that your book can be purchased on Amazon.
Yes.
And what other sorts of things have you
Google,
done?
And Google.
Right.
And I'm working on getting on PayPal. I think I'm on, but I'm not sure that it's finalized yet.
Right.
So I'm selling the books myself, so I'll have to give you either my telephone number or my email address,
right,
so people can get in touch with me, or they can come to the house. It's near the medical center.
Sure. Well, for folks who are interested in contacting you and learning more about your book, Liberty's Quest, what is your email address?
Libby, KOV at sbcglobal.net.
There you go.
And it's Libby with a Y.
Right, Libby. Y. You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. Libby Kovacs is here, and she's written a book about her life with James Wright and being the mother of Franz Wright, two Pulitzer Prize-winning poets. We're going to hear a quick public service announcement, and when we return, I'm going to ask Libby about how it was that she first met James Wright and about the earliest years of their marriage. This is KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis, and you're listening to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Okay, next we have Leonard Trask, who says he can interpret hyena speech. Are you ready, Leonard?
Absolutely.
Then take it away.
He's saying, believe it or not, some companies still test shampoos and household products on animals. 600 companies don't. For a free list showing which is which, contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. That's PETA, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510, or visit PETA.org.
They didn't really say that, did they?
Maybe. I'm better with jackals.
You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. This is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS. I'd like to remind you that this is just one of 10 public affairs programs that you can hear Monday through Friday on this station. We've got programs with titles such as It's About You, This Week in Science, Speaking in Tongues, and Radio Parallax. Each one of them offers different perspectives, different fonts of wisdom, different reasons why you'd want to tune in to your listener-supported local radio station. We're freeform, which means that the DJs choose the music. That means as well, of course, that we have a great diversity of musical tastes and musical shows. If you'd like to find out more about that great panoply of impressive musical choices that you can hear on this radio station every week, then point your browser at www.kdvs.org. Libby Kovacs is here in the studio, and we've been talking a little bit about her book, Liberty's Quest, the compelling story of the wife and mother of two Pulitzer Prize-winning poets. She's a Sacramento resident and a longtime clinical therapist. Right now, she's here in the studios of KDBS to talk about her book. So, Libby, I know that you were born in Ohio, but I remember you saying one time that you actually felt like an immigrant, even though you were born in this country.
Yes.
Can you say a little bit about that?
Well, I grew up in a neighborhood that was full of immigrants and mm-hmm. blacks from the South. This is 1928 that mm-hmm. I came into this world, and it was a difficult world. We had my parents, as you said, were Greek, and there were a few Greek families. There were Serb families, Polish, Croatian, one French family, and several families, black families that came up from the South.
What city was this?
Martins Ferry. It's right on the river.
Right.
Across from Wheeling, West Virginia, mm-hmm. and about 60 miles from Pittsburgh. We're called the Tri-State Area.
and a place that's also made famous by some of your husband's poems.
Oh, yes. There was a festival that they had there for about 20 years after mm-hmm. he died. Yes. I went to one of them. Franz went to one of them. Yeah, it was very impressive.
I'm sure.
Yeah,
and we have a sense of some of the families who you interacted with. But
right.
for people living on the West Coast, which is most of our listenership, tell them a little bit more about okay. the surroundings.
Yes. Well, Martins Ferry is in a valley between two hills, and. And Jim wrote about that those hills. He called it
the
Green Wall. That's
right.
What it is. And I always remembered those hills as being gray and covered with soot and iron ore and smoke, and it was dreadful. Even as a child, I objected to the pollution in the air. We had high water marks, we call them, where the dirt would get into your skin and you couldn't even wash it off sometime. But, you know, the people there worked very, very, especially the men, they worked very, very hard in the steel mills, the mines. We had a blast furnace just around the corner from us. And the Ohio River at that time was dreadfully, dreadfully polluted. I went swimming once and came up with oil dripping off.
Oh, no.
It was awful. But what I learned is that every family was different.
Mm-hmm.
And my family was very different from the Serbs and the Poles and even from most of the Greek people. My father was really a very patriarchal. I mean, he believed in honor and... And, you know, you didn't dare do anything in public that would embarrass your father or your mm-hmm. mother.
And he was born in Greece?
And he was born in the Dodecanese Islands in the Aegean Sea. He was born on Kalymnos. My mother was born on Leros, which is only about an hour's boat ride from Kalymnos. But the fascinating thing is, if they had stayed on their islands, they never would have married.
Right.
They marry within the island itself.
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother came from Patmos, which is a very famous Christian settlement.
Uh-huh.
And, St. Paul covered that territory for years. My father's father was a very, very abusive man, very difficult man. And I had diagnosed him after many years of listening to stories about him. And I diagnosed him as a manic depressive because he drank a lot. He was a womanizer. He was a gambler. He couldn't have, somehow or another, my father said, you don't learn on an empty stomach. So he grew up being hungry and deprived and abused physically. In fact, I think my father probably suffered from ADD, but they weren't diagnosed in those days.
Right.
It was a long time, early 1900s. And he only went to the second grade before his dad pulled him out of school and put him to work as a sponge diver, which is, for me as a child, when he told me this story, I was about 8, which was about the age he went into sponge diving, and I was terrified for him. I don't know whether, I don't think he was even old enough to have one of those air masks, I forget what they're called, on his head. But he told me the story of how he would tie a rope around his waist and tie it around a large rock, and then he would jump into the ocean, and this rock would take him down to the level where he could find the sponges.
How frightening.
I was just terrified for him. But he just took it all in stride, apparently, or maybe afterwards. I don't know how he resolved that issue with himself, but I was horrified. I did. And my mother also came from Leros, and all these islands were occupied by the Turks at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the First World War, Italy came in and was going to free the Greeks from the Turks, and ended up staying there for another 25, until the 40s, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was a long time. So they were under one tyrant after another, and the Germans, of course, were probably the worst.
Right.
And they, we heard horrible stories of starvation and so forth. And I always imagined myself, I was an adolescent by the time the Second World War came along, and I used to imagine myself being an underground fighter.
Right.
But because my father, when I was 8, decided spontaneously one day that we were going to go back to Greece, and that was 1939, just as the war was starting.
Right.
And I thought, oh my God, I'll never survive if we go back, because I have no way of escaping as I did in this country. So finally the war did break out, and of course we didn't go back to Greece.
Right.
And in a way, I mean, it's terrible to say, but I was thankful that I didn't have to go back there. Although I loved Greece, because as an adult, I went back to Greece 3 times.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, I had great times.
Now, you spoke before of escaping, knowing that you wouldn't be able to escape if you went back to Greece, but escaping is an important
theme
of your book, Liberty's Quest, The Compelling Story of the Wife and Mother of Two Pulitzer Prize-Winning Poets.
Well, it's also my story of trying to find my freedom, my identity, because I didn't feel like I had an identity. I was Paul's daughter, and later I became Jim's wife. And,
right.
And, you know, there was always, like I was an appendage or something. But I learned early in life that my destiny was to be married to somebody that my father decided would make a good husband for me. And he did. I mean, he made very good choices. I think about that often, because my My when I graduated from high school, my father was approached by a young Greek man who had just graduated from Ohio State University. And my father couldn't understand why I didn't want him. I said, well, it wasn't that I didn't want him. He said, but he's got a college education. He speaks Greek and English fluently. I said, but Dad, I want to go to college. Right. I don't want to marry somebody who went to college. And he just threw up his hands and he didn't know what to do with me.
Yeah.
Because women did not have their own lives. They did what their parents arranged, whatever their parents arranged for them. That's what happened. They would have their children, and that was their main job, was to have children.
Right.
And I didn't object to marriage itself, but I wanted to make my own choice.
Did it turn out that you were the first in your family to attend college?
Yes, yes. And my youngest brother, who came along when I was about 14, mm-hmm. also went to college, but he went to Wisconsin on a scholarship, a wrestling scholarship.
Oh, yeah.
And became a social worker. So there were two of us in the mental health field in our family. Yes, that was very interesting.
And where did you end up going to school?
Oh, after I graduated from high school.
Right.
I met Jim in high school, my senior class. He had been ill the year before. He'd had what we call a nervous breakdown and was in a hospital for about 4 months. And the doctor said it'd be best for him to stay out of school and just have some fun and get to play some football or do something besides sit in the house and read all
right.
day. And so he did, and he had a great time. So he graduated with my class in 1946. Well, that was the first time I met him, was in my English class. And the main task that we had that year was to write our autobiographies.
Oh, yeah? How fun. Well, let me remind folks that we're chatting with Libby Kovacs this afternoon on KDVS. This is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Libby Kovacs is the author of Liberty's Quest, the compelling story of the wife and mother of two Pulitzer Prize-winning poets. And this Jim that you hear us speak of is Jim Wright, or James Wright. He was a poet who was elected as a fellow of the Academy of American Poets in 1971. And the following year, his collected poems received the Pulitzer Prize in Poetry. He's someone who, some have said, modeled his work after Thomas Hardy and Robert Frost, wrote beautiful poems of detailed, natural reflection and description, as well as poems with an incredible emotional impact. I'll be reading a poem or two by James Wright later on in the program. So the two of you met in your senior high school mm-hmm. class.
And he went off to, it was the end of the war. We graduated in 1946, but he... I think he went in voluntarily and was stationed in Japan for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And he loved Japan. And he loved the West Coast, especially Seattle, Washington.
Right.
He did most of his training in Washington State, and he always wanted to come back there. When he got out of the Army that was about 2.5 years later, so 1948, yes, I met him again downtown, and we had coffee one day together.
So did you run into each other then?
Yes, we did. And I just listened to him primarily because he was so excited because he had gotten the GI Bill.
Right.
And he could go to Kenyon College, and he was just thrilled. The faculty there, they were wonderful people. And the friends that he made from New York City, most of them were from New York.
Mm-hmm.
And he had just a wonderful time at Kenyon. And at the same time, I was going into nursing. And in fact, something that he said really motivated me and pushed me to go into nursing. He said to me one day, we were having coffee, and he said, I think he wrote me a letter from Kenyon, because we corresponded for about 3 years. And he said, Lib, you can complain about your father until hell freezes over, but you have the choice. You can stay home, or you can go into nursing and do what you want to do. And it never had occurred to me that I had a choice.
Right.
Nobody ever talked about choices in those days. And I thought, my God, yes, I do have a choice. Well, by July 31st came around, and the registration was August the 1st, 1948. I had been accepted in 1946 because I applied for the nursing school. And so with my, and the day before, I told my father, I'm going into nursing. And he was just out of, you know, he said, I don't know what to do with you. He threw up his hands. He said, okay. After a while of thinking, he said, you have three choices. You can stay home. You can get married like every other normal woman in this world. Mm-hmm. Or you can leave. But if you leave, you can't come back. And that shook me up a bit. And I knew that's what would happen. We all knew that. If I left home without his blessing, I would be an outcast. Within 2 minutes, I think I was upstairs packing my bag.
Yeah.
And the next morning, I had my brother drive me up, and it was only like 5-6 blocks from my house. So I went in with my acceptance letter, and the superintendent of nurses called a judge to make sure that it was legal for me to be there. And the judge said, yes, she's over 20 now, and she can make her own decision.
Right.
So I had some validation finally.
And some independence that, and even though that was frightening, it must have been really exhilarating at the same time.
Yes, it was. I was in shock, of course. It was like pulling up 2,000 years of roots and history, and I had no idea what effect that was going to have. And yet I knew that I couldn't live in that type of culture and survive.
Right.
I felt like I would die of suffocation. But nursing was my first step. I knew you could work, and no matter where you went in the country, you could have a job.
Right.
And I always could get a job. As soon as I walked in the hospital, I could get a job. So, and I planned to go to college after that. So after 3 years in nursing, I did.
Good
but
for
it
you.
Took me a while. Jim and I got married right after graduation. He graduated from Kenyon, and I graduated in June from nursing, and in 1952 of February, we were married in the Greek Orthodox Church.
Oh, yeah.
Which scared him to death. He didn't know he had to sign a paper saying that we would baptize our children in the Greek Orthodox Church, and he was just panicked. He didn't know what to do. And I said, Jim, just sign the paper. We'll talk about it and make our decision later. Don't worry. It'll be all right.
Yeah.
So he needed a lot of calming down. He always reacted with an anxiety reaction.
With some apprehension.
Yes. His background was certainly very different from mine.
Now, what about your family? Did they come to the marriage ceremony?
Yeah, yes.
And were they supportive?
Yes. I mean, I was amazed. My mother insisted that we have a reception at home, which we did. She did. She made everything. And the thing that resolved my fear and that my father would never talk to me ever again was on the day that we were married, and then we had the reception at home. He put on a record, a Greek folks record, and gave me his handkerchief. And that's what he used to do when I was a child. He would come over to me, hand the handkerchief, and I would dance with him.
Oh, that's nice.
So I felt forgiven.
Right.
He didn't say a word.
Right.
We just danced the surto, and I felt forgiven.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, so
let me tell folks at home that if you're just joining us, my guest this afternoon is Liberty Kovacs. She is the wife of James Wright, the poet who won the Pulitzer Prize in poetry in 1972, and the mother of Franz Wright, the poet who won the Pulitzer Prize for his book Walking to Martha's Vineyard. You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. We've got a little catching up to do with our public service announcements. And when we return, we will hear about the early years of the marriage of James Wright and my guest this afternoon, Liberty Kovacs, here on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
The Coalition for a Healthy and Active America is fighting a health epidemic. Childhood obesity. But there is a cure. Eat right, exercise daily, and educate yourself on the causes and the cure. For more information, visit www.chaausa.org. Remember, get up and get active to fight childhood obesity.
You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Andy Jones, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Liberty Kovacs is my guest on today's radio show. She's the author of the 2008 autobiography, Liberty's Quest, the compelling story of the wife and mother of two Pulitzer Prize-winning poets. In that book, she tells us some of the stories that we've been enjoying this afternoon, including about escaping the patriarchal rule of her Greek immigrant family, and also finding independence through nursing and education, and also her marriage to the poet James Wright, winner of the Pulitzer Prize in poetry. Now, Libby Kovacs, tell us a little bit more about Jim Wright. I remember you saying that his family and background, that those were very different from yours.
Yes. Yes, they were. In some ways, they were different. In many ways, they were different. But his father also was a worker in the Hazel Atlas glass factory. Mm-hmm. And he worked at that for about 50 years.
Wow.
Everybody worked in these steel mills, in the mills and the factories, their entire lives from adolescence on until they died, practically. Jim swore that he would never, ever work in a factory.
Yeah.
And he made that his motivating force in his life. And he started writing poetry in about 13, 14, I think it was. And he made up his mind he was going to be a poet. And he didn't want anything else to interfere with that identity
right.
of his. And he was very, he never, the one thing he said, he never wanted to get married and have to work in one of those places and raise, half a dozen kids.
Right.
Well, I didn't want a half a dozen kids either.
Yeah.
I thought, anyway. So I never really expected him to ask me to marry him.
Mm-hmm.
I was really surprised. I started planning because I knew he didn't want to get married. So when I had completed my 6 months postgraduate work on a nursing floor, I took the board exams and passed them. And so then it became, my idea was that I would leave Martins Ferry and go to Columbus and work in a hospital near Columbus and go to Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
That was that's as far as my planning went. And one night, Jim calls me while I'm on duty. I worked the evening shift. Excuse me. And he called and asked me if I would marry him
on
the phone.
Yeah.
I was so shocked and so surprised. I said, well, yes, of course. You know, I wanted to get out of the valley. He wanted to get out of the valley. I thought we could do it together.
Sure.
And so I was willing to postpone going to college and get married and see what happened after that. Well, we did. And his first job was in Texas, of all places. And I had never been further than 100 miles from Martins Ferry.
Oh, yeah? Now, was that a teaching job in Texas?
Yes. He was one of his friends had parents who had moved from Massachusetts to Texas and opened a private school for boys and high school boys. And so Jim was there for one semester to teach English,
mm-hmm.
and I couldn't get a job I didn't work during that time because the hospital was about 10 miles away, and I didn't know how to drive, and we didn't have a car.
Right.
So I was sort of I could do a lot of reading and wandering around the fields in Texas. And
where in Texas were you?
It was called Center Point,
mm-hmm.
and it was about 50 miles or so from San Antonio, I think. It was very close to Dallas. Seemed to be in the central part of the state.
That must have been quite a culture shock for you.
Culture shock. Oh my goodness! Yes, because I had grown up with black people living next door to me, across the street from me. We were surrounded by a lot of black people when I was growing up. They were in school. We were in school together. There was no segregation
mm-hmm.
as far as we were concerned. And all of a sudden, I'm in a place where the three teachers who were there decided to sit in the bus on the last seat there, where all four of us could sit together, and a black man came up to us and very quietly and politely said, "You need to sit in your own area." And that's the first time I actually experienced segregation.
Yeah.
I didn't know that it was that real, you know. And Dallas was full of signs and that you couldn't, you know, fountains where you couldn't drink. And I was really shocked. It was a terrible shock. And although the cook and his wife were black, they never, you know, I'm in the kitchen trying to learn how to cook.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, he was very formal.
Mm-hmm.
And made sure that I knew that I kept my boundaries clear.
Right.
But because I didn't know where the line began or ended.
Interesting. Well, if you're just joining us, we're hearing the stories of Libby Kovacs. She's the author of Liberty's Quest, the compelling story of the wife and mother of two Pulitzer Prize-winning poets. And I'm wondering if you were party to conversations about poetry, if Jim would bring friends home and they'd talk about poetry.
Oh, yes. We were surrounded by poets.
Yeah.
And our English teacher was an advocate for Jim and mm-hmm. for me as well. She never told me directly how to leave home. That wasn't acceptable. But she really encouraged me a lot in my writing. And Jim, too. She was his main advocate. And he was very, very knowledgeable as a senior in high school. I always felt he must have read every book in the library.
Because
he could, and he had an eidetic memory, so he could quote pages and pages of poetry. And I was just very, very impressed with how much he knew. And I really believed that he wanted to be, I mean, he was going to become a poet. He knew And that seemed very real to me.
Yeah.
And I was willing to help.
What sort of early successes or obstacles did he have in those years?
Oh, mostly successes.
Yeah.
There were some obstacles later, but at Kenyon, he just flowed through Kenyon.
Yeah.
And I think in his senior year, he won the Robert Frost Prize for mm-hmm. poetry. He had some poems published in the Kenyon Review.
Right.
And
which to this day is an impressive journal.
Yes, it is. Very, very. And he had applied for a Fulbright scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
And that was our next trip. He was accepted. He was given the Fulbright scholarship to Vienna so he could study the German poets that he loved. George Trockel, Rainer, let's see, Rilke,
yeah.
Heine, mm-hmm. and there was one more. I'll think of it in a
okay.
minute. Okay. And he was just ecstatic about that, and I was too. And then, but we went to Philadelphia so I could get a job, and he could get a job,
yeah.
and he did get a job. And while I was there, I learned that my mother had cancer, and I left the hospital and Jim there. But he came back to Martin's Ferry after a couple of weeks. He didn't like being there alone. And so I went back to Martin's Ferry to be with my mother. And I took her to Cleveland City Hospital where we got a second opinion. And she had breast cancer, and then it metastasized to her lungs. There was no treatment in those days. And I was fretting about leaving her and leaving Jim because he was going to go to Vienna. And he was frightened because he thought maybe he couldn't go to Vienna if I didn't go with him. Anyway, my mother was very, very gentle and very always had been supportive of me. And she said, no, you're married now. You go with your husband wherever he goes.
Yeah.
It was almost biblical.
Right.
And so I did leave her, and she died in October.
Mm.
And we had to go to Vienna by way of boats.
Right.
We went on the Elizabeth, the Queen Elizabeth,
mm-hmm.
and we got to England and had to take the ferry across the Channel, and we took the Orient Express, all these wonderful names of places. And,
sure.
Oh, we were just, I mean, I was just like a little kid in these wonderful places. And we did get to Vienna, and I was pregnant by mm-hmm. then. And so it was a marvelous year. I mean, we were surrounded by Fulbright scholars of all kinds. And he met one scholar there who was from the University of Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And he convinced Jim he should go there because Rettke was there. And
right.
Anyway, there were a lot of very important people there in the English department.
Mm-hmm.
And he was accepted. He never applied to more than one school.
Oh, yeah.
Ever. So after...
He just had lots of friends.
Yes,
yeah.
He did. And the teachers thought he was just wonderful. So, we traveled across Europe with a three-month-old baby.
And that was Franz?
That was Franz. And we named him Franz because he was born in Vienna.
Yeah.
And everybody is Franz in Vienna.
Right.
Although in the States, it seemed like a foreign name too. But he settled that with himself too.
Mm-hmm.
But, and Jim did, we did go to Seattle after we stopped off in New York and Ohio. And he was just in seventh heaven, I guess. He just wrote and wrote and wrote, and he did everything he was supposed to do.
So he was highly productive, and
very
I'm sure a
productive.
Good teacher as well.
I've never seen anybody who was so productive.
Yeah.
I mean, he was writing a book, he was writing his dissertation, he was writing translations, all at the same time.
Right.
He was amazing. He was also very fragile,
mm-hmm.
I discovered. And the one thing that really just threw him completely off balance was that he could not get hired by the University of Washington.
Oh, really?
No. They had a policy that they did not hire their own graduates.
Their own PhDs,
and he was
advised
to apply to another school, and he was heartbroken.
Mm-hmm.
And he did apply to the University of Minnesota, but by... Let's see, we left Seattle in June, and school wasn't going to start until September or thereabouts, and I wanted time to settle down and find a place to live, of course, and Minneapolis was marvelous. I loved it. It's a great place for children,
yeah.
And it's a gorgeous town, even if it is 40 below in the wintertime.
Right.
But he was devastated. He just never recovered. He became suicidal, seriously depressed. And at the same time, I mean, he's teaching English classes, humanities classes. He's writing his dissertation. He's writing The Green Wall. And he was doing a book of translations.
Right.
And I convinced him he should be seeing a psychiatrist, because even though I only had 2 months of psychiatry in my nurse's training, I knew that he was very, very disturbed and was not going to be able to manage. I didn't know how he managed as much as he did. And so he did start to see a psychiatrist. With his book getting published, he became known nationwide, and that was so fast. And he hardly had time to adapt or adjust to the new position that he held, which was being very famous. And I didn't know quite what to do. I just sort of withdrew into my nursing and taking care of France and making sure that everything was working so that Jim wasn't disturbed in any way. But he was emotionally very, very disturbed. And he did meet he met somebody, a poet in New York, who actually told him to arranged for Jim to see a psychoanalyst in Minneapolis. And he saw that man for several years. He was seeing, but psychoanalysis, it doesn't work very well if you're on the edge of psychosis.
Right.
Yeah, it's not the thing to do.
It works much better for neuroses instead of psychosis.
Yeah. And so he was hospitalized, I'd say, about 4 or 5 times. I don't know whether he was ever shocked, had electroshock therapy. He never mentioned it.
Mm-hmm.
And I became seriously depressed after my second son was born in Minneapolis in 1958, so that I was in treatment at the same time. But what I do when I'm depressed, and I've done it since I was a child, is go to school.
Yeah.
And that's when I saw my opportunity to start college. And as soon as we got to Minneapolis, I registered for night classes and then gradually went into the full-time program during the daytime. And Marshall was a marvelous baby. He slept all day.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So, you know, I handled all this stuff. I don't know how I did it, but the kids and Jim was very ill. He went back to Seattle in December around 60, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And he passed his PhD oral exams, of course. And then in 57, his book was published. And he was very psychotic most of that time.
My goodness.
And when he came back from Seattle, he wanted a divorce.
Mm.
And I wasn't crazy about the parties and the events, the social events that were going on in Seattle at that time. And as I said, I sort of withdrew from all of that and stayed and had my son to take care of and
focused on your education as well.
It's and awesome. My own education. So basically, I had a child. I was going to school. I was being treated for depression.
Right.
And they didn't want to let me into the University of Minnesota because that's where the MMPI, which is the Minnesota Multiphasic Interpersonal Inventory, mm-hmm. and everybody who goes to Minnesota gets the test.
Yeah.
And the registrar said, "You're too depressed, you can't make it." I said, "Look, I've been depressed before. I can do it.
Right.
Just let me in for one semester, and if I can't do it, I'll resign or whatever
yeah,
you
withdraw.
Want."
Yeah, withdraw. Yeah.
So he let me in, and I never went back.
Excellent.
I mean, to resign. I just
right.
kept going, and I graduated with honors.
Excellent. Well, people at home are probably wondering if you're just joining us, who this is. It's Liberty Kovacs, known as Libby to her friends. She's the author of Liberty's Quest, the compelling story of the wife and mother of two Pulitzer Prize-winning poets. We've been hearing a little bit about her relationship with her husband, James Wright, as well as with her son, Franz Wright. Both of them have won the Pulitzer Prize in poetry. Well, Libby, I've got to play a public service announcement, but
okay.
we're just about out of time. So when we come back, I will bid you adieu. But first, a little bit of music as I grab this public service announcement. You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM, Davis.